Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. I'm here in the Shaw with you, Fancy Brian. I can see you right through the glass. I got Evan back in the Madison Studios, world headquarters of Devil Radio, if you would. Evan, lightly screening your phone calls all day today at 844-967-2789. But I assure you, this will be a big Monday because we got a big guest and he's coming soon. Former U.S. Senator Al Franken. He's on the road. He's out on a comedic tour of sorts. He's calling it the only former U.S. senator currently on tour. And he joins us today at 3:30 Central Time. Al Franken also doing a big show at the Barry Boer Theater in Madison. I suspect that's part of the reason why he's joining us here. April 29th. That is a Friday night. I believe there's still tickets available, so you might want to check that out. Also in this big show, we're going to talk about the Wisconsin GOP gubernatorial candidates. They're having something of a Mar-a-Lago caucus. More of them have gone down to, you know, kiss the cult leader's ass. So we'll update you on the Wisconsin GOP gubernatorial candidates. We'll also tell you who got the, you know, the coveted Trump endorsement. Oh, very exciting stuff. And Dom of the happier hour at 5 o'clock Central Time. So it's going to be a big show. Phone lines open all day long. 844-967-2789. Want to start today, though, with a conversation about a Texas woman who was arrested over the course of the weekend. Charge was murder. Murder. That's what they want to charge her with. Now, there have been some updates in this story. But Paul Waldman at the Washington Post, going to start here. The Texas woman arrested for an abortion is a harbinger of what's to come. Yeah, I think it might be. And I think it's troubling times ahead. Here's what Waldman writes. Can you picture a United States where women who get abortions, which about a quarter of women will do at some point in their lives, are routinely arrested and imprisoned for murder? Not just one here or one there, but hundreds or thousands. I can't help but wonder if whatever local law enforcement official who ordered a 26-year-old Texas woman to be arrested and charged with murder after a self-induced abortion was getting ahead of themselves, thinking that day had already come. The district attorney will be dismissing the charges since, for now, Texas law doesn't allow for the prosecution of a woman for having an abortion, self-induced or otherwise. But this case isn't just a mistake or a curiosity. It's a harbinger, and not just on abortion. One of the most important dynamics driving U.S. politics right now is the widening divide between the red states and the blue states, which has marked the last year in particular, is the eagerness of state-level Republicans to push the envelope on policy in ways they hadn't dared before. And if Republicans take control of Congress in November's midterms, as they likely will do, the effect on state-level GOP politics will be profound. Here's why. He gives reasons. And it's mostly because of the feckless nature of the GOP on the federal level. The reasons are a little complicated, as Waldman writes. But before I explain, let's consider the broader context in which legislators and parties decide how far they want to go on controversial issues. Both Democrats and Republicans have plenty of policies they'd like to implement, but consider too politically dangerous to attempt. We have all kinds of fantasy worlds in our heads that we of what we would do if there were no political or legal constraints on what could be accomplished. Liberals might want to go far more restrictive gun laws, comprehensive single-payer health care. Hell, let's go Medicare for all, folks. And generous family leave for all. Conservatives might like to ban all abortions, outlaw labor unions, and replace public schools with an entirely private system. But since going that far won't be possible, lawmakers try to accomplish whatever they can, sometimes more incrementally and sometimes more boldly. What's happening right now on the Republican side is that their minds have been opened to almost limitless possibility. Oh, yeah, malfeasance. Unlimited malfeasance. I read on from Waldman at the Washington Post. It's happening because of both long-term and short-term trends on the right. But this is a moment of backlash. A Democratic president gets elected. The Republican base gets angry and mobilized. And where Republicans have power, the state level, they're both pressured by their constituents and sincerely eager to try things that might not have been dared not too long ago. Which is why, for instance, the Oklahoma legislature has passed a blatantly unconstitutional bill outlawing almost all abortions and making performing one a felony punishable by 10 years in prison. Like other recent Republican passed abortion bills, the law has no exceptions for rape or incest. For years, those exceptions were a standard part of Republican proposals, not because anti-abortion conservatives believed in them, but because they were considered politically necessary. So Democrats couldn't say, and this is kind of true, Republicans want to force a 12-year-old girl who was raped by her uncle to carry her rapist baby to term. As Waldman writes, today they have stopped worrying about that argument. They still say, we only want to prosecute the doctor, not the woman who got an abortion. She's a victim too. But how long do you think it will take before the bills they start passing allow women who get abortions to be charged with murder? We can only speculate at this point, but my guess is that once the Supreme Court overturns Roe v. Wade, hear what Paul Waldman wrote there? Once the Supreme Court overturns Roe v. Wade, this is a foregone conclusion at this point, folks. You know, we can pretend like it's not coming down the pike from the U.S. Supreme Court this summer, but guess what? It is. And that is going to be a game changer for our society. And I'm trying to prepare you for that day because it's coming. As Waldman writes, which could happen in a matter of months. Red states will start competing with one another to see who can pass the most draconian abortion ban. And women will start getting arrested. Oh, I'm looking forward to that. How about you, fine listeners? More from Waldman. This new conservative boldness is only going to be intensified if Republicans take the House and or the Senate in November. Even if such a victory is mainly because people are perturbed about inflation, it will be interpreted as a validation of the new Republican extremism. A little sip of rocket fuel there. Yet such a victory contains the seed of disappointment and frustration, just as they did after the sweeping GOP wins in 1994 and 2010. The Republican base will quickly realize to their chagrin that a Democrat is still president. Republicans in Congress can make his life difficult with investigations and stonewalling, but they won't be able to pass any legislation on the things their voters care about, at least without their bills being vetoed. Almost inevitably, those base voters will come to view their congressional leaders as weak and ineffectual, mostly because they are. That will create even more pressure for Republicans to do more where they have power. At the state level, GOP senators and state legislators will feel the need to go farther than they ever have to try and create a fantasy world conservatives have in their heads. Oh, God, I don't want to go where most conservatives live in their heads. And if you think that doesn't involve throwing women who dare to exercise control over their bodies in jail, you haven't been paying enough attention. That's going to be just the start, according to Paul Waldman over at the Washington Post, a column today. So what say you? Well, these seem like very troubling words he writes. But how can it be that bad, right? I mean, Republicans wouldn't go so far, would they? Of course they would. Of course they would. And we have seen this foreshadowed right here in the great state of Wisconsin. Let's not forget what happened after the red wave of 2010. If you're not from Wisconsin, let me tell you a little story about a guy named Scott Walker, the former governor of the state of Wisconsin. Now he won a close election against Democrat Jim Doyle, the prior governor. But Scott Walker won mostly on the idea that he was going to kill high-speed rail. Yeah, apparently a waste of money trying to give people efficient transportation between the major metros here in the state of Wisconsin, but he killed it. That was something of a governing campaign. We all knew that he was going to kill high-speed rail. And he won election, and he did. But above and beyond that, Scott Walker, by February, I mean, he got inaugurated like third week of January, by Super Bowl weekend, he brought the staff around, and he came up with a plan. And it was called Act 10. And he termed it the bomb. And Scott Walker dropped the bomb. Because Scott Walker had big ambitions, wanted to be the president someday. But I can tell you specifically, the bomb that was dropped here in the state of Wisconsin was decimating to the unions specifically. The unions, the private sector unions and the public sector unions. First, he started. The bomb was, you know, under the guise of this, I guess he called it, you know, some sort of budgetary crisis. It was a manufactured budgetary crisis, but you know, you got to give some tools to the different municipalities. And the tools were basically the tools to destroy unionism here in the state of Wisconsin. And it started with the public sector. And the people were outraged. And the people started marching on the Capitol. The uprising was born here in the state of Wisconsin. But Republicans, they wanted, you know, to land big. Wanted to do something really, really big. And Scott Walker did. That bomb. It was decimating to the union effort here in the state of Wisconsin. It really was. And years later, about 4 years later, when he was reelected, he told us, no, the private sector unions, I don't want to deal with them. You know, I don't want to deal with right to work. It's not an issue I'm fighting for or against. Until he did. And he signed it into law in about 2015. And then he promptly ran for president. Come back with us. It's a big Monday edition. Al Franken, former senator, joins me soon. Your calls could be next. Dial them up.
Get her.
That was your whole plan. Get her.
We have found the witch, might we burn, huh?
The mood of the crowd was positive and festive.
I love this plan. I'm excited to be a part of it. Let's do it.